Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Now, you're welcome back. 087 032 32 32. That is the WhatsApp. Now, The Cleaner is a new novel by South African writer and Galway resident Mary Watson. It is a chilling tale of manipulation and obsession about a cleaner who is supposed to be invisible in the homes of the more privileged, but she's actually there with her own agenda. Oh no! And it's not cleaning, which I presume I took from the blood splatter on the cover when I first picked this up. Mary Watson is in studio. Welcome, Mary Watson.
Hello, thank you for having me here.
Very welcome. Thanks for coming in and well done on the book. I have to mention the tagline on the back. Producer Michael is absolutely obsessed with it. It's not dust she's looking for, it's dirt.
Yeah, I do like a bit of drama.
It's a great tagline. It kind of sums up everything that's going on here,
exactly,
doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah, it does.
Give us an outline of what you mean.
Okay, so our main character, Esme, travels from some unnamed country to Ireland. Mm-hmm. And she's come because she believes that her brother, who was in Ireland on a scholarship and staying in this very sort of affluent area, had his life destroyed by one of the people living in these houses. Now, she doesn't know which one is responsible. So the whole book, well, at least part of the book, is about her trying to find out which one of these women is responsible for destroying her brother's life. And she's come to return the favour.
And she's very suspicious of everybody.
She's suspicious of everybody. And she's there because she's a cleaner. She gets to, you know, creep inside, nose around their houses, do a bit of snooping, watch from the sidelines. But the problem is, instead of watching from the sidelines, she gets drawn in.
I mean, it's such a good idea. Together, where did this come from? From a WhatsApp group? Is that
where? Yeah, so I have on a neighbourhood WhatsApp group, I noticed that a few women all had the same cleaner. And I thought to myself that this cleaner would get a very different view of these women.
For sure, than you have.
Exactly.
From the outside, yeah.
Because, you know what it's like. If you have a sort of unofficial or an unscheduled coffee date with somebody and you'll say, you can come over for a cup of coffee, you'll throw in the obligatory, but the house is a mess, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And that could mean anything from you haven't yet cleaned the breakfast dishes to the house is utter sheer and utter chaos with like Lego strewn everywhere. But I have a friend, a very good friend, who said to me at some point when I said to her, but the house is a mess, and she said to me, that's fine. You know, it shows that you're comfortable with having me in your space. And it shows what a good friendship we have.
Good point.
And I thought that was really lovely. And it also got me thinking that to show somebody your mess is a very vulnerable thing.
Yeah.
It's a very intimate thing to let somebody see your mess. So our cleaner, Esme, goes in and sees the mess of the people. And not only the physical mess, but the emotional mess, all the clutter and the sort of detritus of their emotional lives as well.
And what I love about it is that you didn't work as a cleaner in terms of career yourself.
No.
But you had a stint at one point.
No. So this was, I was working at a theatre as an assistant front of house manager. And one night we had this really big, it was a big theatre complex here with about 700 seats. And we had this huge event on one night and the cleaners hadn't pitched for work.
Right.
So the front of house manager and I decided, okay, well, the toilets have got to get cleaned.
Do it ourselves.
So we have to go in and do it ourselves. And then we're going in our evening finery, going in, you know, rolling up the sleeves, smacking out, cleaning the pee off the floors. And we ended up in the men's toilet at some point. And what sort of surprised me was that the interval started, so men started coming in, and it was a huge toilet with lots of stalls. But even though we're there kind of cleaning the floors, these men kind of went in and started using the urinals like right in front of us, even though we were, you know, right there. And it was just like, it's like we're not even here.
You felt invisible.
We were absolutely invisible.
And that put you into the shoes of what
exactly,
a cleaner must go.
Yeah, it was just, we didn't matter enough for them to maybe use the stalls, or there was another bathroom just down, you know. So it was really interesting that our presence there was just not registered.
I mean, the novel, it's a crime novel, it's there for entertainment, but it does get us thinking about the cleaner going into these spaces. Like, there are those of us who wouldn't even invite our best friends a tour of, you know, walk through a bedroom or into it.
Exactly.
Whereas you bring this total stranger in.
Yeah.
And,
you know, it is that sense of invisibility that I wanted to get at. So first and foremost, it is a thriller. It's meant to be fun. And, you know, when I write a book, it is absolutely to get people reading an immersive story. I write the books that I want to read. And that for me is really important, that it's fun, that people can feel something, you know, whether it's being afraid or whether it's suspense or whatever, that they can feel something. But I also do want people to think that when they read the book, they come away with, you know, well, actually, that's a bit of a reflection on maybe privilege or on how some people remain unseen in our neighborhood, in our societies. When I moved to Ireland, because I came here 15 years ago, 16 years ago, with my husband, who is Irish. And when I moved here, I felt absolutely untethered because we, you know, in our lives, we have our friends, our family, our work.
Yeah.
That makes us seen. That makes us recognized in the world.
Yes,
makes
identity
us tethered.
And all that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas when I moved here, I had none of that. I kind of had a baby and I was still trying to figure out which side was what at that point. And I didn't have friends. I didn't have family in Galway anyways. And I didn't have work. So I was just kind of wandering around the margins, pushing my buggy in the rain. And I felt absolutely invisible. So that kind of strangeness of my own experience of moving here is absolutely something that I wanted to write about. It was always something I was going to do. But I, you know, it's not an unusual thing for somebody, for a writer, to write about the alienation of immigration. And you find this a lot in literary fiction. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to write a literary fiction book about it. When I first started writing, I was writing literary fiction. I wanted to package it. For some reason, it made sense to me to package it as a psychological revenge thriller.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we know from the get-go that this is an unreliable narrator.
Exactly.
Who is up to no good,
yeah,
basically. But we're not sure what morally which side to land down.
Yeah, I do love morally grey characters. I think that is just one of my favourite things about writing, yeah, is to explore that line between good and bad, and especially the question of what motivates people to do bad things. Like, is it because they feel pushed into a corner? Is it because their wiring is faulty? What is it? So I'm really, really obsessed with that whole question of
particularly
doing
bad revenge, and that you can just keep going at it, even though it becomes more and more complicated, as it does for this character. Now, most Irish people, I suppose, cleaning houses is something that's probably a relatively new phenomenon for a certain social strata in Ireland, I'd say. In the last 20 years, it's very much middle class. You don't have to be massively wealthy to invite in an immigrant cleaner into your home. But there is the Irish thing where they sort of tidy the house before the cleaner, yeah, gets there. These women that you've, these characters in your book, particularly women, are not so keen on that. They don't care what they,
yeah,
what confronts the cleaner.
Yeah, I think one of the nice things about writing, one of the things I really enjoy, is revealing the characters of characters through external things. So, you know, the old adage, show, don't tell. So that's one of the things that you start to realize, well, maybe this woman is a little bit on the selfish side, and we kind of see it by the way she drops her clothes on the floor or doesn't really care about who's coming in and picking up things. Yeah. So it says more about the particular character. Yeah.
And there's mad parties. And
yeah, you've got to have a bit of mad parties in a book.
Esme, who's the narrator, we're told she's we don't find out where she's from, really, do we? Did I miss that in the book?
It is an unnamed. It remains an unnamed country, and I think it's partly because it adds to her sense of invisibility, mm-hmm, but also partly my own frustration with, am I always forever going to be writing stories about people coming from South Africa to Ireland? I don't know. Yeah. So it just remains unnamed in the book.
And she more or less nails it down between, it has to be three of these wealthy women.
Yes. So she knows that one of these women had a romantic relationship with her, mm-hmm, brother, and she knows that it has to be one of them. While I was writing the book, I realized that this is actually a plot that we've encountered before, and a plot that I've encountered before when I was a child in the 80s, oh, and watching the very inappropriate Shirley Conran's Lace on TV with my mother.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, well, absolutely not viewing for children, but we all watched it and talked about it at school the next day, kind of thing. And there's a very famous line in this book, which is, which one of you is my mother? And that kind of,
right,
hunt for which particular character is the person, mm-hmm, that she really wants to target and hone in on.
And also questioning the morals of these particular women. And
yes, yeah.
They might be doing bad things, but maybe they're doing it for reasons outside of their control, kind,
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Grey areas everywhere.
Grey areas everywhere.
It's compulsory to have a massive twist as well, is it?
Well, I don't know. I would hope it's not compulsory, because I think to force a twist is not really ideal. But this book, from the get-go, I knew that there was going to be
Revelations
that come at the
right line. It carries us along. Is this the first adult book you've written?
So I've published two adult books in South Africa.
Oh, in
South Africa. So this would be, but that was back in the early 2000s. So this would be the first adult book that I'm publishing internationally.
Okay, yeah. Great. And before that, we've had YA, Young
yes,
Adult.
Yes, yeah, I've written a few young adult books as well with Bloomsbury, and those have been, you know, good fun. Yeah,
what have you written about previously?
So I've written The Wren Hunt and The Wicker Light, which is a sort of two companion books, and then Blood to Poison. There are YA fantasies, so a bit different to this.
Huge, though, at the moment, aren't they? And
oh, yeah. I mean, there's always going to be a readership for those, I think. Yeah. They're great fun to read as well.
But you're into this one now. When did you meet your husband then? He came to South Africa, as I read.
Yeah,
Irish
so
fella.
He came out, I think, in 2000, and he came, as I understand it, he came for a year and then he met me and ended up staying for 8. And then, you know, a job came up in Galway and we decided to go for it for the adventure. Yeah.
Quite a long adventure now.
A huge adventure. Also, I suppose I was quite naive in the whole thing because I didn't realise that, you know, leaving a job that I really loved because I was working at the university as a lecturer, my family, my friends, my sense of identity, moving to another country and then also entering motherhood at the same time was perhaps maybe not the best decision.
It's not easy to map out one's
no,
life, is it?
It's probably makes more sense to do things a little bit more slowly than the way I did it.
But it's worked out fine.
It's worked out great. Like, I'm really happy. I love living here. You know, Galway is a fantastic place to live. My kids are fantastic. So nothing to complain about.
Everyone is thinking, particularly because it's a wet, miserable January day, going, why would anyone leave beautiful South Africa, as complicated as it is?
That's a sore point. That is a sore point. I am not a fan of the rain. I do love South Africa and I do miss it a lot. But I am very, very happy here. But I don't like the rain.
And especially it's summertime.
Yeah.
Down the other end of the world.
Yeah, I love the summers. Yeah, and I think, that, you know, the book is set in summer in Ireland.
It
and
is.
I think that there is something
giving it very good weather.
I have kind of downplayed the rain a bit. But there is something very magical about an Irish summer. There's nothing quite like it. I would much rather spend my time living in an Irish summer than a South African summer.
Really, why's that?
Too hot. I don't like the heat.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, you're with us then.
Yeah.
You belong here.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, I mean, the summers here are magical. It's beautiful, gentle, the glowing light. Oh, no, I love it.
Expect the rain. I mean, it happens every year.
The good outweighs the bad.
I think the end of May, you know, when the trees are in full bloom with their leaves for the first time, everything feels so fresh and there's a promise.
June is the most magical time of the year.
Summer could bring anything.
Yeah.
What was your life like growing up in South Africa?
Well, so I grew up, you know, during the apartheid years. So I turned 18 the year we had our first, or around the time we had our first democratic election. So it was a complicated enough childhood because, you know, I obviously fell on the unprivileged side of the line of South Africa. So it was, you know, it was very complicated, very damaging in a lot of ways. And it has been quite a journey in terms of for the country to come from where it was when I was a child, where everything was deeply segregated, you know, along the lines of that favoured a white minority, and to where it is now, which is still very troubled in many ways, but a very vibrant, very buzzing, very beautiful place.
Yeah, extraordinary place.
Yeah.
So you came 18, you said, when they had the democratic elections. So kind of the Mandela. It's a pity he couldn't do another term.
Yeah, he lived a long, you know, very long, very, very worthy life.
With such a unifying,
forgiving
man.
He was.
Wasn't he?
Yeah.
So in the segregation of South Africa, they literally had a designation by skin colour, black, white, and coloured was the other term.
Yes. So
South Africans still use this term.
Yeah, it's a term that has, you know, for all my life, we've known that it's kind of a problematic term in many ways, but it's also a term that captures an experience. It is it captures a particular, very particular way of living in Cape Town, particularly, but also in the other provinces. And it is, you know, there are things that we understand, that we recognize because of living a very kind of particular life in South Africa at that time. So It might not be a word that's known and accepted outside of South Africa, but it means something to us.
Because you explain sometimes to Irish people and they
look gosh, yes. You know, I mean, I've had trouble using the word coloured when people are like, you're not supposed to use that word. And it wasn't actually Irish people, it was in the UK. Oh. And, you know, and there is something very tiring about constantly having to explain yourself.
Oh, I'd say, yeah.
Yes, because I am... You know, I have a friend who tells me home is where you go to be understood. And that's one of the things that I really like about going back to Cape Town is that I don't need to explain myself.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, some people, when they see me, they might assume that I'm Indian because I present as such. But, you know, there's always the explanation, though, it's a lot more complicated. As far as I understand it, I'm something like I've got African, Asian and European ethnicity all within me. So I'm basically a
living
mashup
Galway.
Of that.
Yeah. You're a woman of the world.
Yeah.
It's a good idea to be a writer then, isn't it? Because you can draw from all
of
it.
Well, that's the nice thing is that you do have that sense of living in two different worlds where you've got one foot in one world, one foot in Ireland, one foot in South Africa, which is in some ways also alienating because you're never quite entirely either of those things. But there is a lot of richness in living that kind of dual identity. That hybrid identity.
I wonder, is there a correlation between people who go back to Cape Town not having to explain their background and culture and maybe people in the north of Ireland, you know, not having to discuss the troubles when they go home if they come from outside?
Yeah, I'm sure there is. Like, I think that saying of home is where you go to be understood is such a profound one because it really is, you know, there's such a relief in not being able to, not having to explain yourself.
I'm sure you've read Trevor Noah's book. I don't know if you have Born a Crime.
I haven't actually read the book, but I've seen Trevor Noah speak a lot and I've encountered his... So now, Trevor Noah is an interesting, because he gets called coloured and he's got this lovely skit about when he goes to Cape Town and coloured people in Cape Town kind of pounce upon him. And he's like, because it is a very particular thing because he's not from Cape Town himself and he's actually biracial rather than coloured.
That's right.
Yeah. Because he has, I think, an African mother and
white, Swiss father.
Swiss father, yeah.
Born a crime. Yeah. It literally means it.
Well, that's the thing is that when I tell my children this, that my husband, who is Irish, when I was a child, my marriage would have been illegal, which is bizarre. It kind of blows my mind.
It blows our mind.
Yeah.
But I mean, it should blow our minds.
It's true.
So life in Galway is good. You've got Irish kids.
They've got so many different heritages. They are. But, you know, they don't think about identity and, you know, the bigger questions. They just know they love going to see their aunties in South Africa. They love South Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, they play Irish music, they play Irish sports, they speak the Irish language, and that's where they are.
Are they readers?
To some extent. It's a work in progress, but one of them is very mad into reading and has managed to read all the Alexandre Dumas books. So yeah,
oh, wow.
So we've got one of them. But
the other two are
catching up. Sorry?
The Man in the Iron Mask and all those.
Yeah, he loves them.
Oh, I forgot. You've definitely got a reader in your hands. And your husband, is he a reader?
Yeah, he is definitely. He's a professor in the University of Galway.
Oh, right.
And he reads all kinds of things. But his favourite reading is reading Irish language books.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, so come on, there must be lots of languages then going on in the house. Is that what he was doing, something academic, when you met then?
Yes, so he's a scientist. I was in the arts when I was teaching film studies in the University of Cape Town, and we met at a party, and then I asked him out.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay, it's good to take the lead.
Yeah. if you want something, you've got to kind of go after it, don't you?
You have family still, I presume, in South Africa?
Yeah, so my family's kind of scattered all over the world. I have a sister in Manchester, a sister in Canada, and two sisters living in South Africa. But my my mum passed in 2011, and my dad in 2020. So I actually started writing this book. He was diagnosed with cancer in the early weeks of the lockdown.
Oh, wow.
And I, you know, when I moved to Ireland, it was like with the knowledge that home was always two flights away. Like I could hop on the plane. If there was any trouble, I could hop on the plane. I'd be home in no time.
That was the comfort.
That was the comfort.
And suddenly that
was. And then suddenly it was lockdown. I couldn't go home. But I was between deadlines. So I'd had this idea of a book about a cleaner that I wanted to write. And I started writing this book in those early days of the lockdown. And it was so... It was such a startling time in so many ways. And one of the things is that idea of the house being this thing that you're confined to, this big entity in your life, that your home is your this massive thing that you're kind of confronted with every day and you can't leave. And I think that that kind of lingers in the book.
It does.
And I think also one of the characters is quite grief-stricken because of her father's death. And I think that we have that kind of lingering because my father was diagnosed with cancer and died within 6 weeks in that time. And and I think that
so far away and locked down.
Exactly. And I think that very much lingers in the book at the moment. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. It's another reminder that from that period, which is nearly 5 years ago.
It's five years
those
now.
Those wounds are still there in the souls of people.
But you know, our parents, we carry them with us, where, you know, in whatever way we can as we go on through the years, even if they might not be with us in person anymore, but they're with us.
Okay, well, do you know what? We'll take a quick break. You stay where you are, because we've got to get a break out of the way. But it's called The Cleaner. People are texting already wondering what they missed the beginning. It's called The Cleaner. But Mary Watson's staying with us. Stay with us there for a second.
Email Oliver at rte.ie.
Now, the South African author Mary Watson is still with us. Thanks a million, Mary. The Cleaner is the name of the novel. I absolutely love that quote. This is a message, Mary, for you. Home is where to go to be understood. I've never been able to articulate the loss I feel from leaving home. And this sums it up perfectly. I don't know where that person is from. It almost doesn't matter, does it?
Because no.
No longer home.
We all feel that way, yeah.
This person also says, I'm also married to an Antipodean. This is an Australian. He loves the weather over here. He's still here after 35 years. He still thinks we have it better here than the Australian weather. It's a bit like you and the hot South African weather. Mind you, he is from Melbourne. Ah, well, it would rain a lot there. We'd be quite similar to South Africa. You get a good bit of rain too, don't you?
In Cape Town, our winters can be pretty wet. Oh my God, the wind, yeah. We get a lot of wind in Cape Town and it can be very cold.
Because that's the thing in Galway, isn't it? The trees are bent over from the wind.
Yes, they are.
Sorry, I'll finish this message. This guy's from Melbourne. We live in Merseyside. Two foreigners living in a foreign country. We both love it. And you're living proof of that. I mean, but you're severed from home and you have your kids whose home is Galway.
Yes, it is.
Is that where you've set the book, by the way? It's not clear where the university town is.
So it's unnamed in the book as well, but definitely I draw inspiration from the place around me. So it is very much, for me at least, very identifiable. a lot of the landmarks in the book, I know where it is.
And the snooty academic people.
Oh, we're not going to say anything about that.
They're in there. They're in there for sure. We should take one more break before we go.
From the North Tech Studio, followed by your message to 80889.
The novel is called The Cleaner. It's by Mary Watson. Mary, what are you reading at the moment, or what have you been reading that you can recommend for us?
So, over the Christmas break, I read 10 of 11 of the Maeve Kerrigan series by Jane Casey, and I'm absolutely obsessed with them. And I will tell anybody who will listen how absolutely brilliant they are and get out and read them. They are fantastic.
A very empathetic detective solving crimes.
Yeah, she's just really good. Like, they cover the range. There's, you know, a bit of noir, a bit of thriller, a bit of mystery, a bit of crime, bit of romance, all of it rolled into one really good package.
And she's another immigrant, an Irish woman living in London.
Exactly,
with
a
barrister who is dealing with crime. So
there
you go. You don't have to go too far to find the inspiration. But look, I enjoyed the chat with you. Good luck with the book and everything you do.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me here talking about The Cleaner today.
Okay, brilliant.